Culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when the movie industry, struggling to recover from the coronavirus, actually has a few films opening up in theaters, plus all kinds of films available on streaming. One on Amazon Prime, one on Netflix, then another one on Netflix, another one in theaters. We'll be reviewing them, including the wildly controversial new film, Borat. The subtitle is Subsequent Movie Film, or Subsequent Movie Film. And yes, there is a controversial scene with the real Rudy Giuliani, who knew that he was being filmed, but didn't know the context. Was it fair to Rudy? Was it career-threatening to America's mayor and to the close friend and associate of President Trump? We will get to that and also take a look at a big, lavish, new animated musical film. Film directed by a number of Disney veterans with some spectacular animation, and it's an American-Chinese co-production. Does it end up being worth seeing? We will get to that review of Over the Moon, and plus the new version of Rebecca, lavish romantic film set in the 1930s, remake of a great Oscar-winning classic, Alfred Hitchcock's only Oscar, by the way. We'll get to Rebecca as well here on the Medved Show. But first up, just to remind people that fuzzy math is not something that was invented in this campaign. No, it's not. There was fuzzy math long before, as you can find out in this Call of the Week Classic.
The Call of the Week.
I get so overwhelmed. Like, I don't understand.
It's educational.
Like, everyone goes to the bathroom on campus every day, unless they have some great powers.
It's informative.
Your talk show creates a hostile environment.
Feel the love.
I love Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro, please keep it up.
Hear the hate.
And you're the devil. You're the big Hitler.
Every Friday, exclusively on The Michael Medved Show.
And the winner is...
The winner is Darley in Kent, Washington, leading right up to the 2008 presidential election between Barack Obama and John McCain. Here you're going to hear a brilliant plan to stimulate America's economy. Does the math pencil out? Well, just listen.
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
I'm trying to think outside the box here, so don't laugh at me. But instead of sending $700 billion or $800 billion to six or seven companies that have poorly managed those companies or outright corruption involved in them, why not send $1 million to every American adult in the country? Wouldn't that immediately spur the housing market? Wouldn't that immediately, there are so many things I've forgotten now.
The math doesn't work. That's part of the problem, Darryl, is we have about 200 million adults in the country. Okay, so sending $1 million to people is a lot more expensive, right?
No, it's only 200 million.
No. You want to send $1 million to everybody, I thought.
Every adult.
Okay, how much does that come to?
$100 billion.
No.
If there are 200 million people in the country and you send them to each of them 1 million, that's 200 million. Simple math. And that's
$800 billion. Wait. There are 200 million people in the country. This is a little bit frustrating to me. If you have 200 million people in the country and you send them each a dollar, how much does that cost? Darryl?
I'm a public school graduate.
Okay.
I'm trying to think outside the box here, so don't laugh at me.
Well, it's a good idea. And by the way, the government isn't sending a million to everybody, but they are talking about sending another $1,200 check. And right now the speculation is that win or lose, depending on who actually wins the presidency, either way, that Congress is likely to make some kind of deal on a stimulus package between the election and Inauguration Day, because that's an awfully long time. There are people right now who have run out of their Social Security benefits. And if you listen to the people who actually are looking seriously at the economy right now, the damage is profound, and we're maybe losing some steam in our recovery. And clearly, there seems to be a consensus on the part of economists that we need some kind of stimulus. And frankly, the difference, most recent difference, I think, was between $1.8 trillion that the Republicans were willing to authorize and the Democrats at $2.2 trillion. When the election isn't looming at this invasive factor in all of our lives, maybe, just maybe, they can get that together. And no, it's not sending a million to each person, as Daryl's talking about, but it means some money in American pockets, which would probably be highly popular, highly popular. One of the other election issues that matters a great deal, they just did polling on, and the polling is extraordinarily encouraging. I mean, really encouraging, and I think any sensible American would have to look at that. The Wall Street Journal writes, nearly a quarter century after affirmative action was eliminated in California following a political battle, advocates for increased racial diversity in higher education are struggling to reinstate it. Now, first of all, I hate to criticize a journal, but it wasn't affirmative action that was eliminated by Proposition 209. It was preferential treatment. In other words, affirmative action making special efforts to recruit a diverse student body, all of that is fine. It's just if you have two candidates for office or two candidates for admission to a University of California school, say, and one of them is Asian, and one of them is black, and the Asian candidate is vastly more accomplished than the black candidate, then that's the candidate who gets in. That was the idea of the initiative that was passed. A ballot measure in America's most populous state this year would overturn 1996's Proposition 2009. Can't believe it's 24 years ago, but it is. And would again allow the consideration of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in public university admissions, as well as public employment and contracting. Despite California's shift in the past 24 years to a majority non-white population and its strong liberal tilt, no Republican has been elected to statewide office in California since 2006. The affirmative action measure is trailing in the polls. According to a survey conducted earlier this month by the Public Policy Institute of California, Proposition 16 is supported by only 37% of likely California voters, while 50% of those polled oppose it. That's very good news. Why? Because if America is going to be a just society, you can't discriminate for or against people based on race, can you? 1-800-955-1776. We'll be right back with the great Rudy Borat, a confrontation, and more.
More Michael Medved in a moment.
As Corona. this issue of what people call affirmative action, which really is an issue of preferential treatment, the prediction had been that if Proposition 209 was passed back in 1996, then that would be the end, the complete end of people of color attending California state universities or University of California campuses. That has not been the case. One of the things that you can look up is that right now there's an overwhelming majority of non-white students, overwhelming, in California state universities. And there is one group, and it is not white people, that is dramatically overrepresented and has benefited greatly in terms of college admissions compared to their percentage of the population. That would be Asian Americans. Now, there are a lot of Asian Americans in California. I believe it's about 9%. It's certainly, I think, the state with the largest Asian American population. But right now, and this is where we are, the for Asian Americans, they represent 43% of the admitting class at the University of California at Berkeley, one of the two most prestigious campuses. It's Cal Berkeley and UCLA that most people want to get into. And Asian Americans are 13% of California public high school seniors, but 43% of the most recent freshman class. White students are actually underrepresented. They're 23% of high school seniors in California and only 21% of the incoming freshman class. And there's also been a growing enrollment in California of Latino students, who are by far the biggest group, close to a majority, Latinos, Hispanics alone, of high school seniors in public high schools in California. Now, what does all of this mean? It means a great deal, because there are 9 states across the country that have laws on the books that say you cannot, in statewide hiring — you can do it if you want to, if you're a private business — but in statewide hiring, you cannot judge applicants differently, making race a major factor, which ought to be clear with the whole thrust of the civil rights movement, which was treating people not based on the color of their skin, but the content of their character, or at least their academic record. And the fact that this initiative to try to go back to color coding people by race and judging them based upon their racial origins, the fact that this initiative is losing in California is very good news. In California, in an election year. And by the way, all tribute to Ward Connerly, who had helped to win passage. He was at the time a member of the California University of California Board of Regents. He's an African-American guy. And he had led the fight here. And what the polling shows is that across ethnic groups, this desire to reinstate a preferential treatment is losing. Yes, Americans can get together on some common sense propositions, even in the state of California. And talking about common sense propositions, yesterday was a bad day for Democrats. I'm sorry, it was a bad day for Democrats in the United States Senate in particular. The Democrats boycotted the vote, which ended up being unanimous because all the Republicans voted to confirm Judge Amy Coney Barrett for her seat in the Supreme Court. The Democrats weren't there, and in their empty chairs, they put all of these photographs showing patients suffering from various diseases and injuries and maladies, and who they claimed would be without hope when the Supreme Court strikes down Obamacare. The Wall Street Journal has argued — I've argued on this show for months — The court is not going to do that. They're not going to strike down Obamacare. And frankly, when President Trump is asked and pushed by Leslie Stahl in the interview that's going to air on Sunday night, but you can watch the whole thing, the unedited version. It's widely available on YouTube and elsewhere. In any event, she pushes him on, what are you going to do to protect people with pre-existing conditions when the court strikes down Obamacare? And one of the reasons President Trump doesn't have a ready answer is because he knows the court is not going to strike down Obamacare. It shouldn't, and it won't. Shouldn't, because Obamacare is already part of the fabric of the country. It needs to be fixed, needs to be improved. But you don't just rip out something that impacts the lives of literally millions of people without their cooperation and participation by simply judicial fiat. John Roberts doesn't believe in that. Amy Coney Barrett doesn't believe in that. And they won't even have a decision until long after the election, because they're only hearing oral arguments on November 10th. And then it won't be till the spring or maybe even the late summer of 2021 that they will have a decision. I mean, concerning Amy Coney Barrett, there's an outrageous suggestion from Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey. This is clip 24, Jeremy. He was on a conference call with representatives from several so-called civil rights organizations yesterday. And this is what he said the Senate GOP needed to do. Listen.
We have Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham pushing through this unprecedented speed in the midst of an election where millions of people have voted, are putting forward a judge that is hostile towards the Affordable Care Act, and that even in my questioning did not seem to have an understanding of the racial disparities that exist in this country from our criminal justice system to our health care system. This is not right. It is wrong that we should have a nation right now in the midst of an election where people know that their health care is on the ballot, that equal justice is on the ballot, that access to securing your most fundamental rights and equalities on the ballot, that we should not wait for the American people to speak as they already are speaking and wait to do this until after the next inauguration. To me, this is stunning. It is anti-democratic. And it is an affront to what I believe are a lot of our shared, most cherished values and ideas.
Anti-democratic? All of those senators who are voting were legitimately elected. They're not somehow people who seized power. And the whole notion that this is stunning and this is anti-democratic and this is a crime, this is not going to help Democrats at any level, and certainly not for the U.S. Senate or for the presidency, for that matter. Speaking of that, will there be impact from the Rudy Giuliani controversy? We'll tell you coming up on the Medved Show. Gold has been hit. On the Michael Medved Show, certainly the most publicized movie of those that are being released today is Borat, a subsequent movie film. And it's airing everywhere. It's free for Amazon Prime members, and it's an Amazon-sponsored production. The most controversial aspect of the film is a very few minutes that come at the very end. And for people who have not seen the first Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen, who got quite a bit of acclaim for a series where he impersonated a goofball named Ali G and interviewed all kinds of famous people, including Donald Trump, including Newt Gingrich, who was the only one who seemed to catch on that this was a total fraud. But Sacha Baron Cohen specializes in creating these characters and then interacting with real people and catching it on film. And with Borat, Borat was supposed to be the fourth leading journalist in the glorious nation of Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan, of course, is a real nation. And in the first film, he comes to the United States and basically travels around the country and discovers various people. And he's primitive and ignorant and bigoted, Borat is, but also a bit of an innocent and a naive. And he is traveling around with his cameraman. And basically, the film had lots of elements in it that were hilarious, some that were crude and embarrassing, but a lot that were hilarious. The new film is much tougher to watch because a great deal of it is disgusting, frankly. And the most uncomfortable moment for me is the clip involving Rudy Giuliani. And it's the real Rudy. And in the plot of the film, basically this time, Borat has been in prison camp because he disgraced the nation of Kazakhstan, and the dictator of Kazakhstan, whose name is Nazarbayev, which, by the way, is the name of the real head of state in Kazakhstan, who's not going to be happy about his portrayal on the film. The Borat is released from prison camp to go back to America to deliver a bribe to the president, McDonald Trump. And he can't reach McDonald Trump, and he tries to reach the vice premier, Michael Penis, as he's referred to in the film. That doesn't work. So then he's going to give a bribe to Rudy Giuliani. And the bribe is his daughter, who's supposed to be 15. She's played by a 24-year-old actress from Bulgaria, whose name is Maria Balaklova. And they go to see Rudy for an interview because she's trying to be a TV journalist, but he's preparing to offer her as a bribe, as a gift, and basically a sex slave to Rudy Giuliani. That's what the movie sets up. Rudy, of course, knows none of this. And you can see he's being interviewed by this attractive 24-year-old interviewer. And on camera, as they're setting up the interview, they're flirting. And she started it. She puts her hand on his knee. She talks basically about wanting to get to know him better. And here is what Colby Hall, who is no Giuliani fan, writes about in Mediaite. He says, sure, the scene is cringeworthy. Really tough to watch. He's right about that. But anyone familiar with the dark art of post-production can spot some rather gaping holes in the chronology. The video and audio edits that are almost certainly designed to portray the personal attorney to President Donald Trump in the least favorable light. In the event that you have not seen the 75 seconds or so of pure cringe, you can check it out. It's important to first note that Borat filmmaker and star Sacha Baron Cohen has no journalistic obligation to the truth here. He is purely an entertainer, and his goal is to craft the most uniquely cringeworthy moments featuring known personalities, regardless of the broader context and what actually happened. And then he writes, secondly, post-production editors are remarkably skilled at crafting an entirely new context and narrative by stripping audio tracks or adding footage filmed at a later date that helps build tension and, frankly, paint the subject in the most or least favorable light designed. Again, their goal is not to portray the truth, but to produce the most entertaining clip. So what can we be assumed to be true of the Giuliani-Borat clip? That Giuliani entered the bedroom with his interviewer. He patted her on the lower back while he was sitting on the bed. By any measure, that's fairly creepy behavior. I personally sense that America's mayor was clearly thinking he was taking a trip to the, well, he puts it, taking a trip to the boom boom room. And Rudy's 76, by the way. And there are a lot of other suggested variables presented in the clip. We hear Giuliani's interviewer, who's, of course, supposed to be Borat's daughter, Tuta. She invites Giuliani into the bedroom for a drink, which the viewer sees as the reason they end up in the bedroom. But we don't actually see her say those words because her back is turned to the camera when you hear those words, which means it could have been said in some other context or even added after the scene was filmed in a sound room. See, this is really crucial because what Rudy says is that he had just gone into the bedroom to take off his microphone. And part of what happens when you're wearing a lapel mic like that is you put it somewhere on your suit and it goes through under your shirt, usually, because you want to hide the cord. And you're wearing a suit and tie, as Rudy was. Okay, so he's taking off. At what it looks like is the way they shot it and the way they set it up is that Rudy's lying back on the bed and he has his hand in his pants. And it's very embarrassing. However, it's not what you think, because what he was trying to do was to take off the cord and the mic. And then Borat comes in wearing a bra, and I don't know why, and panties. And, of course, and that made me think this had happened before to another conservative victim of Sacha Baron Cohen. Is that in his film Bruno is another fake journalist who's supposed to be a gay fashion writer, Austrian. He did the same kind of thing to Ron Paul. He conducted an interview, and then he tried to get Ron Paul to go into the bedroom with him, and he made advances to Ron Paul. And the former presidential candidate said, "That's disgusting. What are you doing?" And basically, it's supposed to be ha 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 because Ron Paul is indignant because this creepy younger Austrian visitor is suggesting sex. And again, there are many, many reasons, it seems to me, to question Rudy Giuliani and his ethics and who he is and what he's doing. But the fact that he's responding with smiles to a 24-year-old interviewer, she only is playing a part of someone who's 15. She isn't really 15. The whole idea that people are putting forward that Rudy Giuliani gets involved on camera with some 15-year-old, it's ridiculous. By the way, it also showed incredibly poor judgment for Rudy to go through any of that, knowing that he was being filmed. What is he thinking? He ended up calling the police after Borat comes in with bra and panties and then leaves with his, quote, daughter, on-screen daughter. So is the film worth seeing? Is it funny at all? You've got some indication here. Give you the full review and more, including Over the Moon. And more coming up on The Medved Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
It's outrageous what's going on out here.
It's The Michael Medved Show.
It's a tremendous, tremendous thing, and I'm telling you, it's going to explode.
The Michael Medved Show.
Medved Show, our second to last weekend before the climax of the whole year, which it seems to be, is the election, November 3rd. But there are also a bunch of movies that are out that might be able to distract you a little bit. Some of those movies, most of them actually, from Hollywood. Okay, we'll deal with Borat's subsequent movie film first. It is, again, free for Amazon Prime members if you want to see it. But should you want to see it, The plot, as I mentioned, is that Borat originally is supposed to be not giving away his daughter as a bribe to President McDonald Trump, as he's referred to in the film, or to Vice Premier Michael Penis. But originally he was supposed to be giving a chimpanzee. Something happens with a chimpanzee. His daughter is smuggled along in a cage. And most of the film has to do with his adventures with his daughter They come to know each other. And the only element of human warmth, really, in the whole film has to do with the idea that Borat, who hardly knows this girl because he's been in prison camp for years and years, gets to know her and actually value her, which he doesn't before. Some of the dialogue in the film sounds like this.
I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
Where is everybody?
They're wanting everybody to quarantine so they don't spread this virus.
I hope quarantine never ends.
Okay, and a part of the problem is there's a lot of coronavirus humor. And for a lot of us, that's not a very funny subject right now, especially while we're still coping with a pandemic. There's also a great deal of Holocaust humor. And it's not just like last time. This is a whole specific subplot in the film. And there's one particularly disgusting scene involving a, quote, moon dance, which involves truly gross out displays of menstrual blood. And is part of it funny? Some of it's very funny. But the whole film lacks any of the warmth or the innocence or the affection for the characters that was there in the first film. And it was there in the first film. The first film was also gross and randy. This has some inventive gags, but they're all much more set up, and they also are all much more questionable as to whether, was this really scripted and planned? Were these people really responding the way they were? One of the scenes was shot in Olympia, Washington. And I know from people who were there when he was shooting it that people responded to racist things that Borat was saying with booing. And of course, the way they edit it, all the people are cheering and waving Confederate flags and things of that nature. It's also very political, very, very anti-Trump. And yes, you can see Borat dressed in a Ku Klux Klan outfit invading CPAC. The only clever part of the film, it seems to me, is that they give a reason why nobody recognizes him. He decides that because he is recognized so much from the first film, he travels everywhere in funny disguises. And okay, that's a clever plot point. 2 stars for Borat. It's very much rated R, unless you really savor jokes about male and female genitalia and some graphic content. Probably dubious. Over the Moon is a very different film. Over the Moon is a PG film based upon a Chinese folktale. It features a good vocal cast, some okay music, and some truly spectacular animation. At least it's spectacular when it's focusing on human beings. But the plot involves a young girl who wants to reconnect with a mother who passed away and to the goddess who lives, according to Chinese folklore, on the surface of the moon.
Poor lady, that goddess. So lonely up there on the moon, dreaming of her one true love.
It's just a silly myth.
It's not a silly myth. It's real.
Okay, it's earnest, and it's fun, and it's watchable. The problem is, when they get to the moon, she builds a rocket ship. When they get to the moon, the sort of pastel, cotton candy look of things is a completely different animation than you see on Earth, and much less interesting and much less compelling. And the film goes on, and the plot is difficult to follow. It is PG. It, I think, would be appropriate even for very young viewers. And again, some of it is magical. The warmth of the family and the little girl's relationship with her father is very well portrayed. The vocal talents are people who are fairly well-known rising Asian American actors. It probably will be a big hit in China, if not in the United States. 2.5 stars for Over the Moon. Rebecca on Netflix is a remake of a 1940 film that won Best Picture, based on a 1938 Daphne du Maurier novel. The original film starred Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine and Dame Judith Anderson. This time, it's Lily James, who plays a young bride who's brought home by her aristocratic widower husband to a mansion. But the mansion is haunted not only by the real-life figure of Mrs. Danvers, who is played by Kristen Scott Thomas, but by the memory of the title character who you never see. Her name? Rebecca. Listen.
This is all very new to me.
I have no secrets from you.
Old marriages have their secrets.
And yes, there are plenty of secrets in this marriage. It becomes a murder mystery. The performances by Lily James and Kristen Scott Thomas are quite good. Lavish costumes, lavish sets. People who love Downton Abbey will feel they're on familiar territory. But the pacing is all wrong, and Armie Hammer is disastrous. Disastrous. He is miscast, and he has no depth or darkness or anything to his part. It's a big disappointment considering the talent involved and considering the source material. The black and white film by Alfred Hitchcock from 1940 is better in every way. It is rated PG-13 for some sexual material and themes involving suicide, murder, and destruction. Two stars only for Rebecca. There's another film out there, which is a science fiction film we'll give more time to later, but it's actually playing in select theaters. And it's pretty good. It features Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan. They are playing paramedics who have to cope with an epidemic of people taking a designer drug that actually takes people back in time. It is called Synchronic, and it earns at least 2.5 stars, but it earns that. The plot doesn't make any sense, of course, but it's effectively put together. And then the best film, really, of the week, and a 3.5-star movie for me, is a documentary called Totally Under Control. It's available for rent on various platforms. It's the story of how the coronavirus came to the United States. It is not, as it's been portrayed in the press, simply a Trump-bashing film. It, in fact, shows all of the triumphs and all of the many mistakes that were made at every level, and deals with some pretty shocking interviews from people who worked at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and were trying to handle the pandemic in its earlier days. It covers the beginning of the first cases of coronavirus that ever emerged here in the United States. All the way down, the film ends, finished the film, the day before President Trump was diagnosed. 3.5 stars for adults only, because some of the disturbing material about the disease. In Totally Under Control, available for rent on various platforms. I hope your weekend is wonderful, that there can be some relief from politics. We're going to be talking about a big article on Monday that talks about how people can maintain friendships and family relationships in spite of political divides, which is a useful message. And of course, we'll be responding to the vote, final vote scheduled Monday for Amy Coney Barrett, and the polling reaction to the debates, and much more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.